On standby? Okay, now we're recording. Check standby.
Okay. Hello, this is Arun Blake for CKUT, and we're at the People's Commission, Whose Security, Our Security, speaking with Gary Kinsman, who is the author of The Canadian War on Queers and editor of, I forget already.
Whose National Security.
Editor of Whose National Security. And I wanted to ask you at first, Gary, how did you become involved in this type of activism against security in Canada?
Well, I started off being an activist in the left and in the gay movement in the 1970s, and one of the things I fairly quickly encountered were various police forces who were an obstacle for social justice movements. I was a member of the Young Socialists for a period of time, and I was actually there in the mid-70s when the RCMP put letters down on the chairs of everyone who was at the Young Socialist Convention that year, basically trying to foment division and problems in the group. And it was quickly recognized by everyone, all of the different components of that organization, as being done by the RCMP, and we all denounced it. So from a fairly early point in my activist career, like mid-1970s, I was aware of what the RCMP was doing, and later on CSIS, and I've been consistently interested in what the security police have done and have seen how they've been an obstacle for social justice movements. I guess my more recent interest has actually been in the national security campaigns against lesbians and gay men, and that was really sparked by the release in 1993 of a series of Access to Information Program documents of the national security state that were basically organizational documents of the Canadian War on Queers that Dean Beebe, a very inventive journalist with Canadian Press, got released. That's what sort of led me to my more recent investigations of the national security campaigns. And what I guess has been most interesting about all of those historical investigations is there's been horrific stories of their policing, their denial of people's human rights in the name of national security. But on the other hand, there's also been amazing stories of resistance and non-cooperation, you know, that I draw a lot of sustenance from and a lot of hope for the possibilities for change in the future.
And all of this new security, well, new, how early on did this sort of secure surveillance of Canadian citizens, how earlier on, when can we trace its roots to? Where can we trace its roots to?
Well, I mean, if you're going to talk about sort of more contemporary forms of organizing of national security police in Canada, you're really talking about the RCMP and its creation in opposition to things like the Riel Rebellion. The precursors of the RCMP, things like the Winnipeg General Strike. But basically, throughout the 20th century, you had national security policing going on in the Canadian state. When the RCMP sort of became discredited, then the government formed CSIS to continue some of the same
work. When was that?
That CSIS was actually formed in 1984, ominous in and of itself, if you think about Big Brother. But that was because during the 70s, the sort of dirty tricks of the RCMP against the Quebec independence movement and the left were exposed, and the RCMP lost basically almost all of its credibility, so the Canadian state was forced to form a new civilian-based national security police force, which became CSIS.
For the average Canadian citizen, what does this sort of security intervention in our lives mean?
Well, I think a lot of people aren't fully aware of it, but for those people who are impacted by it, it has a major impact. I mean, whether it's the thousands of lesbians and gay men who were purged from their government positions by national security police, whether it's protesters against the Olympics or at the G20 last year who had their rights violated and their rights denied, whether it's all of the Muslim and Arab-identified people living in Canada who have been targets of the so-called war on national security that CSIS has knocked on their doors and asked them all sorts of questions and tried to force them to inform on their friends. CSIS and the National Security Police have an awful lot of impact on people's everyday lives. I think one of the most important things is that these stories need to get out there. A lot of people are not aware of them. A lot of people need to get more educated. I think when most people living in Canada right now hear about some of the gross violations of human rights that CSIS and the RCMP have been involved in, they begin to realize that there's a big problem there. So, you know, on the surface, they might say, well, the RCMP and CSIS, you know, they're defending our nation's security. But when you really talk about what they've been doing in the name of national security has been to attack specific individuals and specific communities. They've certainly, I mean, CSIS and the RCMP, in my view, have actually been a major threat to the human rights and the security of lots of different groups of people living within Canada.
What types of precautions can Canadian citizens take to protect themselves from this?
Well, I think the most important thing to begin with is just to find out what's going on, to find out what CSIS has done, what the RCMP have done, to educate about what your rights are, that you, for instance, you know, don't have to talk to CSIS agents if they come to the door, that there's lots of organizations that are counseling that they shouldn't be cooperating with CSIS in any way, shape, or form. And I think it's also important to begin to connect the dots, right? Some specific community of people might have experienced CSIS racially profiling them, let's say. Other activists, for instance, in the union movement, like in the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, might have experienced CSIS interventions and infiltrations of their unions. Lesbians and gay men in the past were central targets of the national security regime. I think what we need to do is to connect those experiences together, to begin to realize it hasn't just been an isolated incident that CSIS or the RCMP or the National Security Police have gone after one particular group, but there's something wrong with the very project of national security and with having national security police forces that we have to challenge. I guess just as a concluding point, from my vantage point, national security has always and everywhere been about excluding some people from the fabric of the nation, expelling them from the fabric of the nation, but also at the very same time including a much more limited group at the center of our society. And we have to begin to reject national security itself.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
How much autonomy does Canada maintain in managing its security infrastructure, or is in terms of how it relates to other countries, namely the United States?
Well, I mean, there's two ways of answering this question. The national security regime and policing in Canada is not simply an emanation of the United States. If you look at it historically, it has its own roots. In terms of campaigns against the left, against the union movement, against communists, against lesbians and gay men, those were all in some ways homegrown within the Canadian state. But having said that, obviously the Canadian state operates in a global situation where it shares security information. It's had security alliances, obviously, with Britain, but also with the United States, and there's been major influences of the United States on Canadian national security practices. Oftentimes, the standards used in the United States to get security information, for instance, have been imposed within the Canadian context. So there's clearly a lot of interaction there, but I do think it's important for us to realize that the Canadian sort of ruling elite, ruling class, whatever you want to call them, the Canadian state, has its own interests in maintaining a national security police force and a national security regime. Oftentimes that will coincide with the interests of the United States, but they have their own interests, their own internal threats.
Can you think of what some of those threats may be, one or a few examples?
Well, I mean, think about the Winnipeg General Strike. Think about the struggles of Indigenous people. Think about how in the 50s and 60s, the Canadian state actually understood lesbians and gay men per se as in some ways a major risk to the nation.
How would they be a risk to the nation, lesbians,
well, I mean,
gays?
It's hard for us to think, looking back on it now, but, you know, at that point in time, heterosexuality was constructed as being in the national interest. Lesbians and gay men threatened it. So therefore, we had to be expelled from the fabric of the nation. I mean, the union movement historically, the communist movement, the left. It's important to understand that national security is not about defending the security of everyone who lives in the nation, right? Not about defending everyone who lives in Canada, let's say. It's actually about defending the interests of the elite who are most identified and able to construct the nation in their interest.
And the elite is made up of who?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at it in the context of the Canadian state, I mean, you're talking about white middle-class elite that is largely English-speaking, although not entirely, that is largely male, that is largely heterosexual identified, and it's that elite that has historically used national security to buttress and to defend its positions. Now, that's obviously shifted and changed it a little bit over the years, but in the context of the war on terror, the so-called war on terror, you can see that really clearly, that, you know, they're trying to expel people who are Arab-identified or Muslim-identified people of color from the fabric of the nation. They're trying to expel those people. Well, on the other hand, they're actually sort of putting in place in the middle of Canada, at the center, they're including sort of like, you know, in a certain sense, a sort of white Christian-derived form of culture and civilization. So national security is everywhere. Always about expelling some people, but it's also about constructing the nation in a particular type of way with particular type of interests predominating that exclude other people from it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Gary Kinsman, author, editor, professor, and presenter here at the People's Commission. What's it called again? Who's Security?
Our security.
Whose security? Our security. This is CKUT Radio 90.3 FM.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Much appreciated. And thanks for all your activism, too.
Okay.
For all of us. Yeah. Okay. Have a good evening. Thanks.
I've already got plans, but I will be here. I think my plan is to